good evening, good evening. It is hour number two, 11 minutes past the hour of the super terrific Whiz Bang Gallagher Show. I am Scott Spears, your announcer, along with Terry Tackett, the everyman. And now here's your host, world famous comedian, Gallagher.
Thank you. You know, we've had a lot of calls in here, and it's not just about love that I've been talking about, and just about not interpersonal relations. What about a company? You go in for an interview without a plan. You know how many kids, they don't know what to say at the interview, and they ask, what are the days off? I mean, come on. Let's get down to the opportunity. They should be doing some research on the company and know how they're going to fit in. Talk about how excited they're not. So instead, they don't get the job. And what do they say to everybody in the family that asks and friends? Oh, there's no work out there. Well, it's because you didn't do the work of getting the work. You didn't have a plan, because once you have a job, I mean, you when she takes you to meet mom, oh, he's got a good job. Oh, where's he work? You know, like that. Like I said, it's all tied in. You know, every little thing you do tells about yourself. If you don't plan a little thing, it'll tell you that you're not planning big things either. Probably you're not a planning person. You don't. And I saw that. Oh gosh, that comedian who died, and he said the two best things in America was the black church and black
Dick Gregory,
women.
Yes, Dick Gregory.
Well, I mean, who has to, if the guys in jail or ran off, who has to raise the kids and figure out the world and still has time to go to church on Sunday? And so they have plans. I'm not really probably talking to women. They already know. They're glad I'm telling this to the men. Maybe it's an opportunity to bring it up. What were you thinking when you did that? What were you thinking? And they didn't know they had to think, because they were raised by the mother, and they think the world is going to be mothers. But I think mothers pay attention to their sons just so they don't have to bother with the husband. And so that relationship has a problem anyway. They spoil them. Let me tell you who your girlfriend's and your wife's going to be like, your sister. She's going to want you dead, and so she can have your bedroom.
No, death do you part. Exactly.
Yes, yes.
But really, she'll be more like, she'll be competitive with you in your face, and you have to deal with her. It's not going to be, oh, I love my little boy.
Now, why do you want that? See, why do we want this if it's going to be like that?
I didn't say it was, well, I don't think that heterosexual relationships are ever going to be successful, because men have no feelings, and women, that's a very big thing, that they sympathize. And the second thing is that women want to talk and men don't know how to listen. They drift off. They're up in Alaska fishing, and she wanted to talk about something important. She just gets more and more frustrated, you know, and then they explode. See, and then the man says, well, it has happened all of a sudden, because they're oblivious to everything that's going on.
That's sincerity. You have to be sincere in what you say. You can't lay it on.
Well, I think you also have to have a plan, and when to talk about it and what to do and how much you appreciate the person and you thought of them. It's a thought that counts, right? And the men, oh, my God, it's a thought that counts. I mean, ask men, why are you unsuccessful? Well, it's a thought that counts, and I turn my brain off. I don't know why.
Relationships are tricky.
Of course.
They're very tricky.
Well, are they worth it? Are they worth the trouble?
Well, it depends on who you are. Some people need it because they don't function well on their own. Uh-huh. But some people do function well on their own and like to be alone. There are different personalities in the
world. I like to be. I'm a writer. I need everybody to leave me alone. I
Bingo.
Love to get a motel room and out in the woods. I do it all the time as I travel around America.
Well, that's why when you come to town to do shows, I think seeing you in the interim is bad, because then we get it out here, mm-hmm. and we don't get it. We don't leave it at the restaurant, mm-hmm. or at the house.
Mm-hmm. I go to the mountain, see, find the solitude and think about life in general,
go
and
to
then
the
try to hit the nail on the head. That's what I'm trying to do, is get to the root of it, be relevant, make a difference in people's lives. Here's what I think you should do if you're you want to listen to me, is think of what you want people to say, then try to get them to say it. Give them the evidence of why they would say it. Or think about what they're going to say from what you've just done. Is that really the impression you wanted to leave? How did you get anything done today, you know, or did you destroy your chances in the future?
Well, see, this is why there is a hole in the world right now in comedy where Dick Gregory has left, because there was nobody like him. Not funny level, not on a funny, people can be funny, mm-hmm. but Dick Gregory was also, he had that conspiratorial side of him, and he could get up. You know why he was funny in that video you watched? And I do implore people to watch it.
I posted
it's
it.
It's hilarious.
I showed it to all 5,000 of my people.
But he wasn't, that wasn't even a stand-up routine. That was not prepared.
Yes, it is. No. Those are the best jokes from his show, and he did them all in a row, and that's bound to kill. He just did the tops of the mountains. He didn't do all the lead-in.
Now, listen, I just want to bring up a point.
He knew all of those were killer jokes.
Okay, I just want to bring up a point that I met Dick Gregory twice.
But did you see his show?
Yes, I did see his show.
You know those 5 or 6 jokes.
No. And Terry went to the show. He didn't.
He went. You went to the show, and
did he
didn't say if I can. That after, what's his name, had an affair with the white girl, and he bought a $4 million diamond for his wife.
Nope,
to him.
He didn't mention Kobe Bryant. No.
His wife. He said if that happened to his wife and he brought her a $4 million diamond, she'd go get 2 more white girls.
That's
got to be in his show. Not in his show.
That might be in his show, but I'll tell you, it's not in the show that I saw.
Oh, it was huge. They fell down. Ladies.
I went to the show.
Sunday ladies fell off their chairs.
But you see, that he could play that because...
He had a bunch of newspaper...
Oh, it's the truth. Anybody can say that joke. I can get that laugh in front of that audience. They wouldn't believe it.
That joke, even though it is in a way about an affair, which is a sexual thing, that joke is not about sex.
No,
that
because it follows it up. Money. He says they're going to go get 2 white women because there's a necklace. Any store that has that has got a matching necklace and a bracelet.
Let me do the joke people know what I'm talking about. Here's what the joke is. The joke is he comes out and he says, Kobe Bryant, this happened years ago.
I already did the joke. They know the joke.
Did he do the joke?
You don't need to say Kobe Bryant. It was just that it was
a basketball player.
He filled it in.
Okay, do they know the joke?
Yeah.
You think they know the joke?
Yeah.
Okay, they know. If you know the joke, good.
I told the punchline. I'd go, if my wife if I did that to my wife and gave her a $4 million diamond, she'd go give me 2 more white girls.
Because she knows
she wouldn't care. She wants the jewelry.
The matching ring. But now the joke.
That comes from knowledge of women.
But the thing that weren't prepared in that video that got big laughs early, that was one of his later jokes.
Yeah.
Where when he came out and he said, I ran into the guy from Walmart.
Oh,
back
those
there.
Are all prepared.
They weren't in the show I saw. His show did not have jokes like that.
Your prices are so low, my brother-in-law didn't have to shoplift.
Yeah. I want to thank Walmart backstage because your prices are so low.
I bet you that's somebody else's joke and he stole it for right there.
He knew that crowd.
Yeah.
The prices are low. Oh, I guess he does know that crowd.
Well, because like I said, when we went there, he didn't use
none of those jokes.
No.
None of them.
He had some newspapers. He referred to a bunch of like newspaper
But look
articles.
Here. He's sitting in front of this dais with about 7 or 8 other very important people. That's no time to hit a clunker. He wasn't going to be telling jokes that he didn't know what the reaction was going to be. He only did his A material.
And
it was too much. They died. I posted it. Go to Leo Gallagher on Facebook. You don't have to be my friend. And go down about 2 feet and you'll see it.
But here is what you won't see if you go to YouTube and search Dick Gregory Comedian. You will not see him tell that joke anywhere else on YouTube.
That's hard to believe. It's a huge joke. It's nuclear.
Here's why I'll tell you that I know this about Dick Gregory. I sat and interviewed him in person.
Yeah.
In a hotel boardroom. Mm-hmm. And he didn't know what I was going to say. He was funny in the interview.
I saw him in Memphis one time. Okay. I had a night off and he was playing nearby and I went to see him and I think I was one of 3 white guys in there. And he said something about it. And I feel sorry for you guys, but I'm not going to hold back like that.
Well, at some point, though, I think his audience got generational because he did have a great joke. Now, this is one I did hear him say a lot. He said, it took me a long time to realize I'm going to talk about white people in this show, but I'm not talking about you white people.
Right, that's what he said.
Yeah, because you people,
not you white people.
You people don't have enough money. You couldn't help me if you wanted to. Yeah. So that's a, you know, he got a way around it. But he was funny in an interview, and that's hard to do.
Well, I wouldn't know. I'm always the interviewee.
Well, yeah, he wasn't interviewing me. He was funny as the interviewee.
I'm the object of the interview.
But he wasn't trying to be funny.
Oh, yes, he is. He's a comic.
Terry, what do you think? I really don't think.
That day you interviewed him, I mean, he was just rattling off, you know, like.
Well, the normal person doesn't do that. They're not glib. They don't remember things. I've got comedians that I've worked with, Bob Nelson, talking to Artie Fletcher, and he says, I don't know how Gallagher remembers all of that. And, you know, well, that's the job. I read it. I look at it. I study how smoothly it moves from one topic to another.
I looked at Bob Nelson's video on YouTube.
Okay, tell me this. Not today. Not
I like when he does your football players.
How much of your act is improvisational when you get up?
Yeah. One-third of it.
One-third? A big part.
But you also have to count as improvisational that I move the material around, and I don't, because I have to have a track of my brain that is saying, how did the previous routines work? What do you plan for in the future? And in what order should those? See, men don't know. They come walking up to a group at a cocktail party, and they'll just say a dirty joke right off. Well, you don't know what they were talking about before you got there. How does it fit in? You know, is your wife or girlfriend or even your daughter going to be embarrassed by you, your ineptness? Go there, stand there for a minute, see what the vibe is, and start off with a cute little joke and get them laughing and save that for your finisher and turn and walk away. When you're about to walk away, tell that dirty joke. Don't just come running up with, men don't think of anything in dynamics or theatrics or.
Well, I have two questions I want to get in because I think both of these are interesting. At the height of your success when you were doing Showtime and packing the fairgrounds, what was your blockbuster joke that you knew was going to knock them dead every night with it?
Boy. Well, I wish you'd asked me, told me that I was going to have to come up with that. Well, you know, times change. I'll tell you when I got in trouble is when they pulled the plug on the sound system. When that little guy that ran for president, Ross Perot, pulled the plug on me for saying a joke that was against the hostage takers. And I knew at that time, must have been early 80s, mm-hmm. when they first started to take hostages in Iran. They were in Iran. And I told a joke to Texans, and they loved it. And the first place I did it wrong and made a mistake, I don't know if I told you, was the first night of my $500,000 job with Kenny Rogers. Did I tell you that?
No, what'd you do?
Oh, gosh. Well, it was the opening of the reunion center of 10,000 people. I mean, imagine, all I did was I helped Jim Stafford for 5 years. Then I did some talk show appearances in L.A. to look famous. And sure enough, I got a big fish. Kenny Rogers' manager books me, and their first job of 100 jobs at $5,000 a night is this opening on Mother's Day, and Kenny's mom lives in Conroe, which is a drive away. She's going to be there, and it's an afternoon show.
Oh, Mrs. Rogers is going to be there.
I still told this joke.
Oh, boy.
And it upset. Oh, it got a huge response. Just huge, huge. Just knocked the roof off the place. And but it appeared as though I had lost the job the first night. But I didn't. And so here I go to tell that joke again at EDS, the grounds of his underground thing. They have his company is a lot of it's underground, you know. And so above it is a park, and he invites everybody once a year, and they get out picnic just on the ground, you know. They'll put out a blanket and all that, and it's Sunday afternoon. But I already knew that was a big joke. So I tell that joke, and he pulls a plug on me, you see. And I think, well, that's funny and all. And I leave, and I go to Ohio. I was in Columbus, I believe. And I remember that the radio stations were all calling me. What do you think of Ross Perot pulling the plug on you? And so eventually somebody got Ross on the phone when I was there for an interview.
Oh, oh boy.
And he said that he wasn't against freedom of speech, but it was inappropriate what I said. How do you circumcise an Iranian? You can't. There ain't no end to them. And then I used the word.
Oh. Okay. Well, see, now
it works real good. It's an old joke, but you see, my job is to focus the animosity and the energy of the crowd against the enemy. You know that it's very competitive.
Well, here is an interesting point, because hot off the presses tonight, Kathy Griffin has now, she's doing an Australian tour because she's
got out of town.
She's shut down here, but she went on an Australian talk show and she said she now takes back her apology, that she did mean it. That
of course she did. She had his head weighing in there.
Was
like,
that awful?
Huh?
From a comedian's point of view, was that wrong?
Well, the object of comedy is to find out what people find and revere and step on it. And so from a comic point of view, she did exactly right. But from a societal and, you know, I ought to know. I was excluded from Hollywood.
What did you do? You mentioned this, but you don't tell us.
I told a number of jokes about gays and to a guy who was connected to GLAAD, Gays and Lesbians Against Defamation, and he was in a critical place. He was the talent buyer at the Caesars Lake Tahoe, and so he knew everybody in San Francisco, and they put me on a list and gave the phone number of my manager and told everybody to call them at odd hours at night.
Oh, my.
And keep them up and just destroy them for my jokes that I had said to a skiing crowd. I'm just saying, you know, I take responsibility for what I said. But if I'd had a different crowd, I wouldn't have gone that way. They were, you know, they're rowdy. These are skiers.
But could you get up to, I know you don't do political, but could you get up and do a Trump joke? People are very touchy about that.
Oh, no, I have a wonderful one. Trump says he loves Mexicans no matter what country they come from. I think that's a wonderful Trump joke, because that's the kind of a thing that he would say and not know.
Right.
The foundation of saying something
that's
like
a good
that.
But do you think it's a good move for Kathy Griffin, who's selling out, this is the prime of her career, selling out big houses. Her whole American tour gets canceled because the theaters were getting death threats. So she goes to Australia, gets back on tour, goes on to promote it, and says, I was unsincere. I didn't mean that apology at all. I'm not sorry.
Is it going to hurt her now?
Of course. How can you believe anything she says? Let's go ahead and be the attorney, the prosecutor. Were you lying then or are you lying now? Now you're going to come back and be somebody else? What an actress.
But you know why she did it.
She's going for the Oscar?
You know why she did it. Because her group
She had to. You know, I like the way Trump says it. He said they have to say that. Well, they would have to say that. He understands people getting in front of the public microphone and saying what they have to say, but really feeling different and doing things
different.
Well,
he would know.
Oh, he's upset with China. That guy was supposed to be his pal and help him with that North Korean, and now he's shooting another missile off. I think he just wants to get paid off. That's what I think. He's noticed the way he makes money is to rattle America, and they come up with some money for him to shut up, and he's trying it again. And he might have even told the Chinese guy, he said, leave me alone. You're not going to give me as much money as they will just to stop this. He has no other cards to play. He has no cards, except I'm a nutty guy when I can have my own scientific programs. And so I plan to do this. But those Japanese are on pins and needles over there. They're willing now to pay more for liquefied natural gas just to get away from atomic power. But the bloom of radioactivity from that problem they had, that meltdown, is coming across the Pacific, and it's about halfway. And it'll hit, nobody's saying nothing, and it's getting diluted more and more. But it polluted the Pacific with radiation. I don't think I'd have some fish in the future.
Ooh, so stay away from the fish.
Well, you know, did you ever hear of tilapia when you were young?
No,
did you
not
ever
tilapia.
How do they invent a new fish? And it's It's pervasive. It's everywhere. You get the fish sandwich. You can get it in this and that. And the other, and this. What's a tilapia?
But it's expensive fish.
I never even see them catch one. They never say, well, we got five tilapia today when we went out. Where'd that come from? And then these finger lobsters, those are the regular lobsters. They're just catching them before they can even grow up. And I think all the big fish are out of the sea. Once again, no plan. If Japan and those Oriental countries over there want to eat a lot of fish and send out these boats with the big nets, they have to figure out how to do it so it renews itself.
But we tried.
They killed the goose that laid the golden egg.
People were out there trying to warn people in the 70s. They were saying, hey, we need to stop doing this. We need to da-da-da-da-da. Nobody listened.
Well, we can't be sending them corn because there's no more fish in the ocean when they overfished it. And that we're in charge of corn. I don't know if you know this, but it's a wonderful. The same thing that makes the hurricane come up the Gulf makes the other rain in Nebraska and Iowa, Minnesota. I'm up there. I go around all them cornfields.
Where do you play well and where don't you play well?
They love me in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Wisconsin?
Wow.
Yeah.
Really? Why Wisconsin?
Mine is not the reason why.
Green Bay.
Show
Green
up
Bay.
And.
You draw big houses.
And do. I did three times 2000 for a. But they have a major football team, so you might expect that there's a lot of rowdy folks in the area that like to have a good time.
Where don't you play well?
Oklahoma City.
Well, anywhere Glad is Boston.
Still?
Madison, Seattle.
Wow.
Boston.
Yeah. It has something to do with that latitude there. You can go right across.
So you would not play well to the. I would think.
I wouldn't go there at all.
Well, I think you and Bernie Sanders would be peas in a pod.
I wouldn't go there at all.
Ben and Jerry's up there in Vermont. Bernie Sanders in Vermont.
Chunky.
I love Vermont. I do work in Vermont.
The latitude's okay for you there?
I guess being out in the woods. But once you get into town and they put on high heels, and I got a problem, you know. But if they're all girls that bowl and fish and put the bait on the hook, they're okay.
So you're do you have an age limit to your show?
Well, I'm 71, so I was 10 years older than everybody when I was 30, and I entertained them when they were teenagers up to 20, so they're around 50, 55 now. But I'm hoping they'll bring younger people. I don't know why they don't look at my videos on YouTube. There's five pages of them. I didn't post any of them and become my fan. That's how it worked in the 80s. Why doesn't it work now? I guess...
Well, I don't understand from those Showtime specials why nobody said. I mean, everybody got a sitcom. Everybody did. Fox was up and running.
Because they threatened to boycott any network or sponsor. Well, they don't want any trouble. They, you know, a network guy, he's got his car payment, he's got his condo, his lifestyle, he likes where he is. Why would he suggest a guy who might be trouble?
Well, what brought an end to it? How many new specials for Showtime did you do?
14.
14.
Wow.
So what brought an end to that?
I don't know, because it cost me a lot of money. I had $100,000 invested in the next show, a foam rubber steamroller, and I was going to squash kids. With the, you know, you better straighten up. I'm going to squash you with Gallagher's steamroller. And so I had it all made and ready to go with people from Detroit who were in the auto business and made a replica for me. And I ended up having about $100,000 in it because I had a workshop, tools, materials, the time it took, about a year to build it, a trailer to keep it on and everything. And, I don't know why they pulled the plug on me.
Well, because I remember
they don't ask me to come back and let the old guy do one more show.
Well, that's what is shocking to me.
You should ask me, do I have another show?
Well, do you have another show lined up?
Oh, you are going to ask me.
Yes.
What would you do in a new show? I mean, who are you going to offend? How much trouble are you going to get into? Are you going to tell that Trump joke?
Yeah. You'll be off to Australia.
But can you really tell a Trump joke without them thinking that you're a Democrat? And then if you told a Democrat joke, what do they think? You're just playing dead?
No, you can't.
Look, this kid, this is why he never had a TV show. He offends everybody.
No, listen, here's the interesting thing, because Showtime, in the 80s, this is true, each of those pay cable stations, that even once you had the regular pay cable, you had to pay more, had a comedian who did a ton of specials.
Yep.
HBO had George Carlin, and Showtime had you. And you both did a ton of new stuff. And it's interesting that George Carlin's dead, but he was doing another HBO special when he died, and it has been 25 years since you've done a Showtime special. Showtime took boxing from HBO. They've got all that stuff, and they've never asked you to come back. You were what put Showtime on the map.
Exactly.
I know. One would expect some kind of allegiance. What am I looking for? What's the word that means they stick with you?
Loyalty.
That's it. Loyalty, because I helped start it. I felt that pressure to come out with something before they decided to drop Showtime, because people told me, you're the only reason that I have Showtime. And I think, well, I better get them a new special. They can't wait a year. You can't get a special every fall and keep it through Christmas. And it's not going to happen. Or in the summertime, you know, they're going to go, I'm going to save me $75 or whatever it was.
So if Showtime, because I think a lot of these muckety mucks in Hollywood, this is what I think the problem is. They think, oh, if we go get Gallagher, he's going to ask for big money.
Yeah.
And then he's going to do something inappropriate. He's not going to let us.
What? Hollywood is afraid of spending a lot of money on talent? Come on.
Everything's at reality garbage.
I will say, the way the guy explained it, he said everything's going more towards the reality show.
Yeah,
now.
They don't pay for
it. He said it's so easy to
oh,
do.
Oh, yeah,
those
I know it's no money.
He said it takes like
$50,000. But that's the same
with
comedy, because you don't pay for writers, and the guy comes in with the show already done. Talk about planning. I want to talk about Kevin James and Kevin Hart doing a one-hour special wearing dark clothes in front of a black curtain. Who in the heck allowed that? No women were ever in the room and say, maybe you shouldn't wear black against black. Don't magicians put their people that they want to be unseen in black? Well, why would you do your whole show? And Kevin had a couple of routines. I guess they're both named Kevin. But Kevin James did that being underwater, going skiing, and he made his arms be the water. He did what I'm saying, he's used his body. He was a woman looking at a card. Why hide this? People will say, well, black makes you look thinner. It also makes you disappear. At least with Kevin James, you could see his hands in his face. With Kevin Hart, I didn't see him till he smiled.
Well, see, this is why Showtime will not work with
anymore. People don't know Kevin James is the guy from the King of Queens.
So. Yeah. How can you hurt Kevin Hart now? He's hot.
Yeah. But the Showtime people go, oh man, we're going to be turned off.
They want to be cutting edge, and this is a new world. Come on.
Yeah, but you used
let
to.
Me, I'm in the shadow.
You smashed cream corn. Now,
let me ask
you went back on Showtime today. What is it going to be? Is it going to be a satire?
That's what I was going to say.
Are you going to smash the things? Are you going to do the deals?
If you went back to Showtime right now, would you have a special that you haven't done before for them?
Are you going to smash new stuff? Because that's what they want.
Yeah.
We have a short attention span.
Yeah.
That's what they remember you for.
You can't say we when you've chosen not to have a relationship. You're in the 10-12%. Why are you laughing? That's right.
Yeah.
You can't say he's an average person with everybody's going to the bar to meet somebody.
No, because they don't want to see other people get up on stage smashing stuff. They want to see you do it on Showtime. It's different.
All right. Are you asking me, is there anything else in the world besides a watermelon?
You did the play around with me.
No, here's what they should do.
I'm going to ask you a question. Let's say I own Showtime.
Yeah.
I'm Bill Showtime, whoever that guy is. Okay, Gallagher, you put us on the map. We know it.
You did 14
you
specials?
You did 14 specials, big
They're
ratings.
All great.
Our subscriptions were kept. We want to do another one. We want to be retrospective here.
Bring us in the new.
What are you
going to
do? What are you going to do?
I'm going to do a cartoon. And the cartoon is a man with a hammer, and he chases a watermelon that has arms and legs and eyes. And the watermelon outsmarts the guy with the hammer. This can be played because it's not language everywhere around the world. And it imitates some of the jokes that they had in The Roadrunner, where it's all a long chase scene, and I've already got a lot of the script written, and I've got cartoons are on my Facebook, Leo Gallagher, and you can see the cartoon character. And that way I live forever because you're going to draw brown hair on the cartoon character. And I'm not going to be an old guy with gray hair. Well,
this is
I'm ready to move into cartoons. I'm trying to entertain my grandchildren. They're 6 and 7. I know what he'd like. And he'd like this.
Who produced those shows? You did.
I did.
Okay. Well, here's what's interesting to me. That last time you were here, 5 years ago, you did a show.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow the Letterman people called, because I remember this.
Yeah.
And they called and they said, we didn't know Gallagher was in Central Ohio. I forget what the story was. Forget about that.
I know what's really going on there. He was going to retire.
Right.
And he knows he stole the watermelon thing when he first came to New York. He wanted to apologize publicly to me before I died, and he noticed that I had a heart attack, and he wanted to get that done.
Well, God
and
bless
him. He did. He apologized to everybody in front. Look, Dave Letterman don't do nothing he don't want to do.
I asked
Jay Leno when he first started throwing watermelons off a building, why is Jay doing that when he knows I'm Mr. Watermelon, and that's kind of my act, and I don't have a talk show in New York in the Ed Sullivan Theater. And Jay says he don't care. He doesn't care. But he did care enough to apologize. And then George Miller was a friend of both of ours, and he got cancer. And I think I heard that Dave paid his medical bills near the end.
Did he talk to you at all off camera?
No.
None at all?
Not a word.
Wow.
I only talked to Dave on camera.
What does he do during the break?
See, I don't know. But here, let me tell you what I did.
Okay.
I set up a business in New York. That had a realtor in a car, in a Lincoln Town car with a driver, and Dave used it. And so I know some things about how he negotiates to buy things, and I know some other things. So even though he wasn't
there was some money.
You got some insider secrets.
Yeah, but I did a lot of people. I had the president of the toilet company. That makes all the toilet, American Standard, him and his wife. I think we showed them 300 or 400 condos and apartments in New York, and they didn't buy. And they said God said that they would buy from me, from my company. And then they didn't.
You know, it's funny.
The president of Showtime did this to me. I told him about this service like it wasn't mine, and he sent his wife around, and we showed him an apartment, and they bought it using another agent. I mean, he found out that somebody in the office was a realtor, and he used them to buy the apartment.
I think we lost a part. When you were telling people that you had another Showtime special plan with the steamroller and all that, what happened? They just didn't return the phone call?
Well, you know, I really never negotiated with Showtime itself after the fourth special. I left Ken Cragen after I did one special, and then I negotiated a deal, and I was so naive. I asked for 150 for, I think, The Maddest. And 175, then I wanted 25,000 more for the next one. And I think that was my really good one, Stuck in the 60s. Or it could have been the other way, Stuck in the 60s and then The Maddest. But it was like 150 and 175,000.
That was
really? I got 115,000 for the first one.
But by the 14th one, hopefully you were getting big.
Yeah, I got $1 million.
Wow.
But I spent $500,000. That's the one where I took the set from Hollywood all the way to York, Pennsylvania, because that's where Harley Davidson is, and that's where York Barbells is, and that's where a great audience is. You ask me where I'm hot, I love them. York, Pennsylvania just killed. They loved me, and they had a great time. They weren't rude. I don't like Detroit. That's the worst place that I worked with Kenny.
Motown.
The worst for knowing how to act. Minneapolis is the best. They really know how they go out. They're sophisticated. They appreciate thought and artistry, live performance. Texas is different. They likes me because I'm rowdy.
Is that what
I wouldn't do my Minneapolis show down in Texas.
Well, you know what's funny? Because aside from the watermelon, what people remember about you is when you shaved your head. Like, that was a big deal that you shaved
your head. Well, I didn't want to get old, and I thought if you couldn't see where the hairline was, that would be a better thing. What was even more horrible was I was suing my brother at the time, and I was trying to get him to not look like my logo, which has long hair and a mustache. And so I had to appear in court, in patent court in Detroit, and say, my look is this, but I'm not looking that way right now. Oh, God, it was terrible.
Well, you know, there was this whole that brother thing. There was this lady who you did an interview with online, and she posted it like nobody ever had heard that story before.
Really?
Yeah. That's a pretty common story.
I think it is.
I mean, we all know what happened there now.
Yeah.
Poor. And he's just. What does he do now? Do you even know?
No.
Yes, you do. You know what he does.
I was afraid you were going to ask me, and then you did. Why would you put me on the spot?
Well, I just wondered what he did. That's
you didn't
question
want. You're wondering for everyone,
right? Because most people ask you what happened.
I'm not a source of information
that.
On what my brother is doing. That I had to sue to stop doing what I told him to do to begin with. I babysat that guy.
Yeah.
I'm 5 years older than him. Mom and Dad went to work. He was the job. Okay. He was my job.
But you liked him at some point because you gave him your act.
Well, I don't know. Your mom gives you her child and says, I'm going to go and have a life, and you can stay here and babysit. My brother, who was only a year and a half younger than me, that later went on to the Naval Academy and taught umpteen hundreds of naval airmen how to fly jets at Patuxent River Naval Air Station, he'd run off and play with his friend. I didn't need to babysit him. My sister, who was 3 years younger than me, she would find a girlfriend to play with. So I'm really stuck with the baby. And that was the ball and chain for most of my life.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when you go through comedy, and you've been on Howard Stern, you remember when he got his big break was when Pat Cooper was on his show, and all of a sudden he hated his family. I don't know if he did or not. Maybe he did. But his son was calling it, and Howard had that all set up where the son would call in, and then the mother called in, and they didn't talk to Pat anymore, and he's screaming at him. And that's really what made Howard Stern. If you go back in the archive, that was a very controversial morning. Everybody listened to that.
Mm-hmm.
And Pat Cooper's an evil guy. And I like Pat Cooper.
Is he dead?
No, he's still alive. But he was on the show a lot because he was an entertaining guest.
Uh-huh.
But he was so abrasive. Well, one time I even said to him, I said, listen, you're about 90 years old now. Your son is willing to come on with you. This is not Howard Stern. Let's just make up before the end comes. He wanted no part of it. He was just... I don't know why. I mean, it's one show. What's going to happen? He's going to find your phone number, show up on your door?
You know you were sticking your nose in, and one thing leads to another.
No.
You know it. Why else would you do it as a radio man looking for...
Ratings.
Right.
Ratings.
Right.
Well, wouldn't that
now
be
you're playing innocent.
No, it is ratings, isn't it? Because if they broke up on the Howard Stern show...
Right, all he had to do was say, I don't want to do that for ratings. I know, you know.
Yeah, that's all he had to say. Right. But I just wanted him to come on and say, I'm sorry. I didn't want the fight that erupted, because I think that's bad radio after a while. There's people screaming at each other.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted them to just, that would be a story in and of itself that they had.
Let me tell you an idea that I have for using virtual reality at...
I wanted to get that in.
You have to admit that Grandma does feel like she can't participate with any of the groups and that she's going to sit on a park bench and watch the little kids go around the merry-go-round. This is what's the matter. We need activities where the whole family participates and has a memory together. And I think that virtual reality gives this opportunity because you can each be a virtual character. And Grandma could be a dinosaur. She can be a gorilla. And everybody will know that in that virtual land. And now what this requires is things on your wrists so we know the position in space of your hands, and then a pad that you dance on, and it knows where your feet are and how many steps you've taken and how fast. And so you stay on your pad and you move your arms, and your character does that. So now grandma, who would be normally slow, now she's a big whatever monster if she wants to be. And you go about adventures and as these characters, and now they have something to talk about. Now those adventures are puzzles, and they're unable to figure it out, and the time elapses for their time in the virtual. They have to go out and go around the park and talk about how they're going to attack the problem. You see, now they're doing something together as a family, instead of the kids run off and do that, the big rides, the little kids are at the little rides. They need to do something together. So I'm going to go right from here to Universal. I'm going to ask them to do these things that I've asked first, and then I'll go to Disney, and I'll tell them. I'll say, now don't make me go to Disney, but I like Universal because they have to be edgy to be competitive.
You're going to peel out of here on September the 10th and head right to Universal.
That's right.
Right.
Uh-huh. I'm going to tell them about my movie starring Rihanna, where she would play Enhedwana, the first person to ever write. She wrote songs, as a matter of fact. So Rihanna will play just wonderful. 4,600 years ago in 2300 BC in what is now Iraq. So we're back in the same place we're still having problems with. Her father, the king of Akkadia, leaves her in enemy territory after he conquers Sumeria, after they invent writing. And so they're able to capture her laments, her songs of, oh, dear me. And you can go and search them yourself. Just do Enhedwana, E-N-A. Just put down female heroine. That's how I found it. I'm curious. I want to know. If you want to get girls, points with them, know more about them. And she does a wonderful job. Now I was thinking, and so I wrote this movie. It's all the scenes are on my Facebook, Leo Gallagher.
You know what I just realized? Those are fantastic ideas. I was listening to those, but I just realized we are taping this for video, and you called yourself Mr. Watermelon. We bought a watermelon for a prop on the actual video, and we've set it behind you the entire time.
Oh.
You didn't see that watermelon over there?
Yeah, I did. I didn't think it was
relevant. just a prop.
Well, it's good. It needs to be in the picture.
We'll have to get it in the picture tomorrow.
Here's what should not be in a picture with a comedian. A stool and a bottle of water. What? It's not funny.
Well,
why
George
is it
Carlin.
There?
George Carlin. That's George, Robin Williams.
Well, I saw George do a special where he had a Pepsi on it. And he never used it the entire show until he was exiting. And he realized, oh, there's the Pepsi there. While he's getting tumultuous applause, he's drinking a little bit of the Pepsi to make it worthwhile that they got. But he's leaving. Why drink your Pepsi now? There's no time to wallow in your success and slowly open your water bottle and take a drink while they're all enjoying your last bon mot. And now you put your top back on and put your water. George Burns was 100 years old sucking on a cigar and didn't need to hydrate during his show.
Well, Robin Williams used it as a prop, though. He'd spit on people.
He sweats. I don't even think an animal sweats like Robin did. Everybody laughed at him. He just burst into sweat.
You know, this is a horrible thing. I could never get into Robin Williams. I never understood that free association, and I really couldn't. I couldn't tell you one movie of his I liked.
And now, why did you say that? See, once again, what was your plan?
My plan for... Oh, I did have
now
a plan for
now,
you're
trying
that.
To get a lot of phone calls from people
no,
that are...
I'm just...
Well, what are you doing? You're just bullying forward,
no.
And you said to yourself, I'll knock Robin
no,
Williams.
No, I'm not walking, knocking Robin
Well, what
Robin
did you do it for?
Because,
but just as an example of how men don't have a plan, in the last 5 minutes,
tell
us why did you... To raise yourself?
No,
you
no,
wanted to
no,
set the record
no,
straight?
No. Because he was considered to be like the funniest man alive, and I never understood that. Not that he wasn't funny, but he was not the funniest man alive to me. Billy Crystal was funnier to me than Robin Williams.
Billy has done some wonderful routines at some critical times in our society. The song thing that he did one time on the Emmy, on the Oscar.
Oh,
was just great.
Those Oscar openings.
Or the things that he did as Ricardo Montalban.
Ali and Cosell.
and right, brilliant. He did great. Let me tell you what happened to me at the beginning of my career. I was asked to do a CBS preview with some other comics, and he was one of them. So I went down there. Kenny Rogers' manager got me this big look at the talent, and he did this thing where he pretends he's in a silent movie, and they flash the lights, and he... And so later on, there was a cocktail party afterward with all the folks, and you're supposed to schmooze and everything. And the lady comes up that represented CBS. She said, "Did you see Billy Crystal?" Now, I'm not going to make over him. I don't even like this whole idea that she's going to ask me if I was impressed with Billy. No, I want to know, did you see me smash the food on my suitcase circus? Isn't that fun? And, you know, and so actually, he lived near my manager most of my career, and my manager would tell me that he ran across him at the grocery store.
Was it?
And he'd ask about me.
Well, I find him funny, Billy.
Yeah.
I find Dick Gregory funny.
I know, but he didn't work the middle of the country. You see, no, that's but that's you have to know about the rest of the country. You can't just be.
Bob Newhart was funny.
Yeah, but he's from, Chicago, in the middle of, he's a button-down regular guy, and he's going to work everywhere. But Billy couldn't work
You know who I've been watching lately, an older guy, Jonathan Winters.
Winters was tremendous.
I thought he was funny.
I know that Robin Williams sold a ton of, he was Carson's last guest because Carson loved him, and Mrs. Doubtfire. I just can't get into that movie. To me, that's just not.
So you didn't like Tootsie either?
No, not really.
Well, what about when that other actor that's so famous, he was in Bosom Buddies. He started off. So many of them. And then TV actually started with a guy in drag, Milton Berle.
He was funny.
Well, is it really? Have you ever looked back at that? At the old
Milton Berle?
Yeah, the kinescopes of him coming straight at the... They used to think that was funny, you know, because it was outrageous.
Yeah,
he was doing more
than
you.
Geraldine, Flip Wolfson, we're talking
You're
about.
You're right. Can't they, any of them, become famous without putting on a dress?
It's something about putting on a dress. It's
well, what do you mean
thing?
Something about it? That's the comic reversal. And that's what you do in comedy, is you do the reversal. That's why the kids are terrible, is because the reversal is to give the really smart jokes to the kid in a sitcom. And so then we end up with a stupid dad, and then we end up with families imitating what they see on TV. And we got wise guy kids and dumb dads that can't do things. Mom's making all the decisions.
TV imitates life.
No, TV is directing life, is what I'm saying. The problem is that we don't eat dinner with each other and catch up, and everybody eats in a drive-through and puts the bags in the refrigerator and has turned the house into a hotel, and the living room's a lobby where they just pass each other and then go into their rooms and get on their mobile devices and ignore each other.
Television can do some wonderful things, though, and it did one of them last year, I thought. The moments are few and far between. But when the Cubs won the World Series and the rain was coming down and it's the last game and we're in extra innings and we have rain delay and everybody's up at 3 o'clock in the morning, that was a pleasurable moment in television for a lot of people. That's what television should be used for, things like that, not who's going to get off the island.
But once again, we're glorifying athletics, and for people that aren't into baseball, and don't want a bond issue where they have to pay off a baseball stadium, because the town's identity is with, and they lose their really good hitting second baseman. I mean, come on.
But baseball's not the it's the lovable losers. The lovable losers take it to the.
But the whole town shouldn't feel like a loser because the baseball team did.
Well, I don't think they did. They always sold out.
Well,
if the Browns go to the Super Bowl, it'll be the same thing. It's the it's the people who can sell out a stadium when the team stinks. And the Cubs did that for years. The Browns do that now. The Cubs were able to overcome it because they got a new owner in there. And the Browns, Terry, you're a Browns fan. Where are they going?
No, I'm not a Browns fan.
Oh, you're not a Browns fan?
No.
I'm wrong.
Well, in a state where Browns was okay for a name for a team, I don't think it's going to be hard to beat Indians.
They were named after Jim Brown, weren't they?
Well, who wants to be a Brown? In Louisville, a Brown is a sandwich. It's an open-faced sandwich with gravy on top. A lot of brown gravy. It's a Louisville Brown, I think they call it.
Well, we have run out of time. This has been a fun hour. Now, tomorrow, what are we going to do?
Well, tomorrow I'm going to get even bigger. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about how to live. Today we were talking about interpersonal relationships, but tomorrow, because I've had 4 heart attacks and I have a different attitude about life, we're going to talk about how to live. I primed everybody. We learned about our language on Monday. Today we learned about making plans and being successful, paying attention, and we're going to learn about how to live.
Say goodnight.
Good night.
Abraham Lincoln, when it's the, you bring your enemies close.
That was, had you ever seen a primary like that in your life?
You mean Abraham Lincoln?
You weren't there for that one. You weren't there for that one.
I read the book.
Hillary and Obama. WWGH Radio.